We're in our Advent series called Still, which is kind of a play on the fact that this 2,000-year-old story that we rehearse every year around this time is still relevant, is still purposeful, is still important for us to be working through even today. If you were with us a few weeks ago, we started off talking about the prophets of Israel, who through the dark years of this people reminded them of this light that would come to shine in the midst of the darkness. And even for us now, when we are sensing even this year, even our situations to be a dark time, that Christ is the reminder that there is a light coming that will put away the darkness. Next, we looked at the angels who came and visited Mary and Joseph in the dreams and visitations to announce what was going to take place with Jesus, and how "do not be afraid" is probably a better greeting for this time of year than "Merry Christmas," than the whole idea that God has come, that we need not be afraid, is really the theme of this year, and this time of year especially. Last week, if you joined us for our online service because of the restrictions, Pastor Phil talked about the story of Elizabeth and Zechariah, as well as Mary's song that she sings in response to greeting Elizabeth and realizing the extent of what's going on through the child that she's bearing. And this theme of God's mercy shone through, that God is the one who sees those who are hurting and oppressed and offers mercy. God is the one who did what it took to offer mercy through giving his son eventually to die on the cross for us. This week, we're going to look at what I'm going to call the Bethlehem incident, what Debbie read for us from Luke and Sarah read to us from Matthew. But when you think of Bethlehem, I'm sure because of just our culture, because of how we celebrate Christmas, there's all kinds of ideas that come to mind when someone says Bethlehem, right? Probably like a children's Christmas cantata manger scene where like the kids are dressed up in their house coats and have towels on their head. And I remember when I was in kindergarten, we did one, and I was the most energetic shepherd of all time. I was upset, though, because I had to hold a little lamb, and I didn't get to hold a shepherd's crook. I always thought they were really cool. But maybe when you think of Bethlehem, you think of like the children's nativity reenactment. Or maybe when you think of Bethlehem, you think of the carol, "O Little Town of Bethlehem." I don't even remember the rest of the words. But when we think of what took place that night in Bethlehem, the situation that drew Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem, the fact that wise men from the far east came wandering to Bethlehem following a star, what I want us to do this morning is kind of rearrange our associations in our mind to not so much be about children's pageants and a quaint Christmas carol, but when we think about the Bethlehem incident, I want us to think about God's sovereign work coming to a head in this moment. What took place in Bethlehem, in this small town outside of Jerusalem, is like the culminating work of God's sovereign plan throughout history coming to a head in this moment. When we think of Bethlehem, it should bring to mind the sovereignty of God bringing about his purposes. Now, when I say the sovereignty of God, that means a whole bunch of things to a bunch of different people. And what we're going to talk about when we talk about God's sovereignty this morning is talking about the fact that God is the one who reigns. He's the one on the throne. He's the one overseeing his creation. And he's the one who brings all things together for his purpose. There are debates in the church as to whether, you know, God controls all things like a puppet master, or whether God kind of weaves all things together for his purposes. And we're not going to wade into that debate this morning, but what we're going to focus on is the fact that God brings things together to make this moment happen. Things not just kind of in the quick time frame around the Bethlehem incident, but for years and centuries in advance. In the Bethlehem story, we see that God brings together the weird details of history, the faithfulness of past generations, the prominent people in power as well as the lowly. He brings unexpected random coincidences. He brings inconvenient regulations and personal choices all together in this moment at the Bethlehem incident. God, who rules over his creation, in what seems like a bunch of unrelated things, come together under his sovereign plan so that his purposes can come about. Let me give you an example of kind of like a smaller version of this that I experienced in my own life. So I always think it is very strange that Haley and I ended up getting married. And you guys are like, yes, she's out of your league. That aside, the fact that she grew up in Michigan in a different, you know, denomination strand of the church that I was used to, we ended up meeting at a random Bible college in New Brunswick. Like, there were pieces in play that took place throughout the years that eventually led to us being together and getting married. The fact that Bible college students took a detour one summer to go work at a camp that she was attending in Eastern Michigan that made her want to attend this Bible college when she was old enough to eventually decide to go there, when I switched decisions to go there as well, and then we fall in love and all this kind of thing. I see this as like, yeah, maybe God's working these weird pieces together so that that worked out. I also even look at, you know, the situation 5 years ago when I look back at like the Montague Baptist Church becoming part of Cornerstone. There were like moving parts at play beyond what I feel like were like individual human decisions. And I had to write a paper, I remember, as part of my last semester during my internship about like what was going on. And when I stepped back, to me it was like, I had very little involvement. It just seemed like there was these big pieces that were moving together that God had his hand on. An example from the Bible, in the book of Genesis, we see the story of Joseph and his multicolored dream coat, technicolored dream coat. And Joseph, hated by his brothers, has these dreams, loved by his dad. He's sold into slavery by his brothers. He's falsely accused by a woman he works for. He spends time in jail, but ultimately ends up in like the second highest position of power in Egypt and prevents famine from taking thousands of lives. And towards the end of this story, we see Joseph understanding that what happened to him weirdly is part of God's plan, all piecing and coming together in what seemed like unrelated, different, random events. God brings them together to achieve his purpose. So when we look at the Bethlehem incident, we're going to look at a few different things that are like, wow, God has been bringing these things together so that his purposes can be brought about. First of all, there are people in power who are making their own decisions according to their own agenda in this story. We see the Roman Emperor Augustus, Caesar Augustus, right? The Roman Emperor who decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. And you know, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, we often read that as like the once upon a time to the Christmas story. But this is someone with a specific political agenda trying to maintain control over the citizens of his vast empire. And he has a particular purpose in doing this census. Quirinius, who was governor over Syria, had his way of governing and ruling over his people with his own agenda that was according to his plan. But what we see in this story, that this census that brings Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem ends up fulfilling God's prophecy that he had for his Messiah from hundreds of years earlier. We see these rulers and people of power, the Augustus, Quirinius, King Herod, even the fact that King David came from Bethlehem centuries earlier. These prominent people, their stories are used in God's plan of bringing the Messiah into the world. So it begs a question for us when we are looking at this story, when we see the names of Caesar Augustus, who was like the most powerful man in the world, the question becomes, is he really the one in charge? Is he really the most powerful man in the world? Is he really the one calling the shots when his own decisions of a census are actually used by God for God's purposes? Despite the whims and agendas and failings and victories of political powers, both back then and even right now, God brings them all together for his purposes. At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire, and this was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And we keep reading in Luke's account, all returned to their ancestral towns to register for the census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee under the reign of Quirinius, and he took Mary with him, who he was engaged to, who was now expecting a child. Now, we tame this story so much. Husbands, I don't know if you remember like the last week before your wife gave birth. But for me, that was kind of like a stressful week. Like a week full of anticipation, wanting to have like the go bag ready in the car. Gas tank was always full. Like, we're ready to go and do what we need to do. Imagine getting word that you have to travel by foot for 7 days because the oppressive emperor in Rome wants your part of the empire to be able to report how many taxes he can take from you when your wife is 9 months pregnant. Like, I am feeling the tension and the inconvenience of that. Like, in today's day and age, we would probably file for an exemption, right? We would probably say, like, listen, my wife's pregnant, we can't travel right now, this is incredibly inconvenient, can we schedule another time, can I do it online, right? Like, the week Haley and I were getting married, she got a letter in the mail that she was being called on for jury duty. It was inconvenient timing. Incredibly inconvenient timing. But she was able to file for an exemption and able to get off the hook so we could get married and go on our honeymoon. But the inconvenience of this regulation of what was being imposed on them, what was being told to the citizens of Syria, of Galilee, of Judea, this inconvenience actually ended up being something that God used to bring about this moment. That the Messiah was to be born in Bethlehem. And if it wasn't for this inconvenient regulation from this decree that Caesar made way out in Rome, Mary and Joseph, then they go to Bethlehem, where the baby is born. It was inconvenient. I can't imagine like the 7-day journey by foot. You know, we talk about the donkey that carried Mary. Well, I don't think riding on the back of a donkey 9 months pregnant is that comfortable of a ride either. This is inconvenient, let alone the whole like, there's no guest room available. My goodness. But I think this
This invites us to think deeply about,
if I can say, the inconvenience of regulations that we are experiencing a little bit right now. With Christmas time, yes, now that we're able to gather, but maybe not the whole family together. Or maybe we were really looking forward to getting over to New Brunswick to see our loved ones. We have been longing to see Haley's family in Michigan and have no idea when that's going to happen again. There's an inconvenience to the regulations, but in this story of Jesus' birth, this is something that God actually brings together under his sovereignty for his purpose. I want to invite us this morning to ask ourselves, even in the inconvenience, even in the restrictions that are there, is there something that God may be bringing about because of this? Is there a reason why we can't go and spend the holidays in Michigan? That God would actually have us here or available to a specific person or for here to have a conversation or here to be able to care for someone in a way that we otherwise wouldn't be? Is there a way that God is using even the inconvenience as a part of this story? We're going to talk about God's sovereignty over what we're calling unexpected randomness. And by unexpected randomness, I mean three random strangers from an eastern kingdom coming on your doorstep and saying that a Messiah has born because we've seen a star. You don't get that knock on the door very often. Imagine just the strangeness of this. And as we read through Matthew's account that Sarah read for us, that Jesus was born in Bethlehem during the reign of Herod. And at that time, wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star rose and we've come to worship him." In this strange, unexpected moment, have we ever stopped to ask, like, who's looking for stars? Who from, like, not the kingdom of Israel, who were not people who, you know, were trying to live faithfully to the God of Israel, who outside of this kingdom has been waiting for this Messiah who is looking at stars and waiting, who's willing to travel, man, if Galilee to Bethlehem was 7 days, I don't know how long it took them to get there. How did these wise men end up even knowing there's a star that we should be following if we want to come and see this king? This, I think, is where we see the beauty of God's hands bringing all things together. I want to take you all the way back in the Old Testament to the book of Numbers. There's a story in the book of Numbers where the people of Israel, they're coming through the desert, they're heading to the promised land, and there are tribes around that don't want them there. And so one of these tribes hired this like pagan witch doctor guy to come and pronounce curses over Israel. And in this interesting turn of events, first of all, his donkey starts talking. But then when he goes and he goes to pronounce curses, God kind of does this weird thing in him where he's actually pronouncing blessing over the people of Israel. And one of the things that Balaam, this pagan witch doctor, says in Numbers 24, verse 17, he says, "I see him, but not here and now. I perceive him, but far in the distant future. A star will rise from Jacob. A scepter will emerge from Israel." This is around like 1400 BC, like 1400 years before Jesus is born. This prophecy made through the lips of a pagan witch doctor that there would be a star would rise, a scepter, a king would emerge from Israel in the midst of this. This is part of Israel's scriptures. Fast forward about 1,000 years to the time when the people of Israel, they're sent into exile. The Babylonians come and they conquer their land, and Daniel and oh my goodness, his three friends' names. They're weird names. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's right. This is an aside. We're going to cut this out of the sermon. My grandfather taught me a way to remember it by saying, you shake the bed, make the bed, and into bed you go. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You can take that one home with you. Put that in your notes. When Daniel and his three friends go into exile in Babylon, they're experiencing this hardship, right? They're taken out of their land. Eventually, their homeland is destroyed. The temple is torn down. But similar to God's story of sovereignty with Joseph's life, where he's given influence in a foreign land, Daniel is eventually given incredible influence in the kingdoms of Babylon and in Persia. We read in Daniel 2, verses 48, it says, then the king appointed Daniel to a high position and gave him many valuable gifts. He made Daniel ruler over the whole province of Babylon, as well as chief over all his wise men. It's interesting that this Israelite, faithful to God and his scriptures, becomes an influential voice in shaping the wise men of Babylon, those who would be looking at stars, who would be counseling the kings, etc. What we see is God kind of working things out where maybe it's through Daniel's influence in the exile where he begins kind of this inquiry into the study of when the Messiah would come through the rising of the star through Babylonian scholars and wise men. And this becomes this tradition passed down through Babylonian and Persian empires to the point that when Jesus arrives 580 some years later, that there's this anticipation in Babylon and Persia that something is going on, that wise men would show up on Herod's doorstep looking for this king. God weaving these things together under his sovereignty for this incident in Babylon. We tie this back into our story by seeing Herod, when greeted by the wise men, we see that Herod was deeply disturbed. And when he heard this, and as was everyone in Jerusalem, and he called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked where the Messiah was to be born. In Bethlehem of Judea, they said, for this is what the prophet wrote. And they quoted from Micah, who said, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you who will be a shepherd of my people Israel. We see these prophecies, these movements of God and influence throughout history and the decrees of Caesars and of rulers all coming to a head in this incident in Bethlehem. So the big question, I think, for us to wrestle with in all of these seemingly unrelated things this morning is the question of who reigns. Who's the one who's ultimately in charge? Who's the one actually behind the scenes who is in the rise and the fall of empires? In who is able to gain influence? Who is able to pass down their faithful practices generation to generation? We see that it's not actually Caesar. It's not actually the kings of Babylon and Persia. It's not actually Herod. And it certainly isn't us, that in fact God is the one doing this. Here's how Daniel put it, as he saw how God was at work, even as he lived under oppressive and powerful empires like Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon and Cyrus in Persia. He said this in Daniel 2, 20 and 22. He said, praise the name of God forever and ever, for he has all wisdom and power. He controls the course of world events. He removes kings and sets up other kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the scholars. He reveals deep and mysterious things and shows what lies hidden in darkness, though he is surrounded by light. God in his sovereignty is able to work things out for his purposes. From who is in power, what empire exists in the world and has control, to who is where, when, through all kinds of mechanisms, including our own free personal choice. Paul picks up on this theme in Colossians, where he says this, that Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created and is supreme over all creation. For through him, God created everything in heavenly realms and on earth. He made the things that we can see and things we can't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, authorities in the unseen realm. Everything was created through him and for him. He existed before anything, and he holds all creation together. So the question for us, when we see the events in our world, when we work through and reflect on what is even going on in our own lives, when we look at the rulers and powers that are at play, when we look at the seemingly random events that take place, when we look at the faithful constants of believers, when we see people's free choices, even in our own lives, are we willing to ask, is God maybe at work beyond what I can see right now? Is there something that maybe in hindsight I'm going to be able to look back at and worship God because I saw his hand at work even through all these kind of things, including inconvenient regulations and restrictions? Are we willing to actually, instead of fear these things, take comfort that we have a God who reigns even more than Caesar or Quirinius or Herod? I want to close this morning with this passage from Paul's letter to the Romans. It's not up on the screen. But Paul says that we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purposes. That our sovereign God is working things together for his purpose. Will we then participate in that? Will we then be willing to maybe see what is God up to right now? If you're actually working these things out for my greater good, may not be my present comfort, but for our good. Let's pray. God, you are the King who is sovereign. You are the one who reigns over your creation, and you do work all things for the good of those who love you, for your ultimate purpose. And God, we thank you that you did work these things out in the Bethlehem incident, so to speak, when Christ came into the world. We see your hand through the centuries and generations, and Lord, forgive us for thinking that it's not even now. Help us to lean into a deep trust in your sovereign work, that you are working things out for your good. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.